Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 145, Interview with Mac Pritchard. Mac is the founder and publisher of Mac's List, operates Pritchard Communications, and is the co-host of the Find Your Dream Job podcast. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, Mac and I talk about how he became an accidental entrepreneur, building relationships and networking, the value of informational interviews with professionals, and the importance of doing good. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/145. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a media production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness through video, podcasts, and design for those who dare to build a better world. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/145. By doing so, you'll receive inspiration on Mondays and Fridays with ways to increase your creativity, curiosity, and wonder. All right, you ready for this interview with Mac? Let's get into it. Mac, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little about what you do?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show, Chris. It's an honor.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah. Well, I am based in Portland, Oregon, and I run two small businesses. One is Pritchard Communications. It's a public relations company that works with nonprofits, foundations, and purpose-driven brands. And we have been in business for 10 years. And my other firm is Mac's List. It's an online community for people who are looking for work that matters. And each firm is separate. They each have a team of five people, and they are both certified benefit corporations. They're B Corps. They're part of this global movement of businesses that are promoting social good.
Wow. That's really cool. I love how you describe just kind of like people that want to do good. And it's intriguing that you have the B Corp for both of them.
It's an important value for me as the founder of both firms, but also for the people I work with on my teams. We want to make a difference, and I don't think that's uncommon at all, Chris. I think all of us want work that matters, that allows us to make a difference, whether it's we're doing commercial work, working with customers, or doing nonprofit work. We want the way we spend our days to have meaning.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting story that you've shared, and it's this idea of becoming an accidental entrepreneur. And so what is the story behind Mac's List and how you became an accidental entrepreneur?
Well, I'm well along in my career. I'll turn 60 next year. And before I started my public relations firm, I worked in government and politics and nonprofits. I was a communications director for agencies and elected officials. I never saw myself as a small business owner. But here's what happened. About 10 years ago, I had the opportunity to start my own firm. That's how I began Pritchard Communications. Along the way, I had set up a list that shared job postings, and it eventually became Mac's List, which today attracts about 80,000 people a month to the website and the newsletters and social channels. And each of these firms is a mid-six-figure business. They are private corporations. They're, as I mentioned, they're benefit corps, B Corps. So how did that happen? Because starting my small business, being an entrepreneur, wasn't on my bucket list. And here's what happened, Chris. I think people who are successful in their careers and have the most satisfaction in life really are entrepreneurs. They think about what they want to accomplish, and they set goals. And whether they're doing it in a job inside a large organization or they're running their own nonprofit or small business, they're taking charge. And one of the experiences that helped me so much as I was starting my first business was that I had worked in electoral politics. for more than two decades. And I'd gone through a process through more than a dozen campaigns where I found myself operating like the founder of a startup. I was part of a small team working with a candidate. Conversations usually began around a kitchen table. And we had a product. It was the candidate. And we had a tight timeline. It could be 6, 12, 18 months before election day. And that's when we knew whether or not we had a sale. And along the way, before we got to that point, we had to build an organization with systems. We had to find people. We had to raise money. And when you've been through that process more than once, and I went through it more than a dozen times, you get really good at starting and running things. And that was the perfect training for me as an entrepreneur, but also as a small business owner.
That's really fascinating to be able to take something that you're doing and almost apply it to something new for yourself. Was it difficult to go from the product being a politician to the product being you?
Well, in the end, whether you're working on a campaign that with the goal of electing a candidate, or you're looking for a job, or you're selling a product or a service through your company, you're at your most successful when you understand the needs of the people you want to serve and offer solutions to problems. When you think of yourself as a problem solver, whether it's in a job or as an entrepreneur or as a political candidate, you're going to have the most success when you understand the needs of the people you want to serve. And that starts by not coming to them with ideas about how you can solve their problems, but by listening and drawing them out about their needs. And they will tell you what their challenges are, and they often have the best ideas about possible solutions. When you listen hard and you return with solutions that are going to meet those needs, whether it's in a business, a nonprofit, or a campaign, you will be successful.
Yeah. So there's a real direct connection then between listening for the needs and then coming up with something like MaxList, where you're sharing jobs. How is that morphed over the years? Has it pretty much stayed consistent? You know, you're just sharing jobs, or has it become something bigger and something more?
It has evolved. MaxList began as a simple email that I sent to a few dozen people. And I actually began it way back in 2001. What happened was this, Chris. I left a job in state government. I'd been a spokesman for different state agencies, and I'd worked in the governor's office in communications. I wanted to stay in touch with my professional colleagues in the state capitol. I had always lived in Portland, but I'd been commuting down there 5 days a week. So the way I hit upon to do this, to remain in touch with my network, was to share job postings. So for years, I simply forwarded the job postings across my desk. But as the years went by, it became more time consuming. Eventually, I turned it into a newsletter. And that, in turn, led to a big increase in interest. We went from about 1,000 names to more than 4,000.
Wow.
2 years later, we turned it into a website. And that's when we had to start charging employers for the listings. I want to make an important point here. Not only did I want to stay in touch with people I worked with, Chris, I wanted to be of service to them. And that's what inspired me to share the job postings, because everybody loves to hear about job opportunities. It's valuable information. And people are grateful for that. It's also a way of helping people move ahead in their own careers. So I think that idea of service it's a very important value for us at MaxList. And I think it's a big part of why we've been successful over the years.
Yeah. So you've mentioned the power of listening, and you've mentioned the power of serving your audience. But what are some other key areas that you've focused on to build your business?
One of the facts that people who are successful in their careers learn pretty quickly is that most jobs aren't posted on boards like MaxList. And that we do have a job board. We're very proud of the value it offers. We publish about 500 job listings a month.
Wow.
But there are estimates out there, Chris, that as many as 8 out of 10 jobs are never posted anywhere. They're filled by word of mouth. So I meet job seekers all the time, and I ask how their searches are going. And they tell me they look at my board or another board or a third one every day. And I'm grateful for their attention. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to tap into that hidden job market, you need to step away from the computer and you need to learn how to look for work. Most people struggle with this. At MaxList, we help people learn how to get really good at job hunting. And we do that through articles on our website, a weekly podcast, several books, several online courses. Most of the content is free, and we do it because we want people to be successful in their careers.
Wow. So I'm intrigued by that idea of giving away a lot of content for free, because especially in the creative professional world, you know, that's kind of how you build your name, is you have those projects that are your passion that you're putting out. So you mentioned earlier a mid-six-figure business. You're building a sustainable business by giving content away. How can that be?
Well, we do charge for some of our content, but the idea behind the strategy, and I know you know this, I expect many of your listeners do, is we're doing what's called content marketing. Mm-hmm. And we do it in order to serve our community, but also to build relationships with the people we hope will buy our products and services. As with any sales process, you've got to build a relationship with the people you want to serve, because people will buy from people they know, like, and trust. So how do you build those ties, especially today when there are so many demands on our attention? We found one of the most effective ways to do it is to be clear about the needs of the community we want to serve, and then create content, website articles, podcast episodes, books that address those problems directly. That's one of the reasons why people find us. The job board itself, all of those job listings on our website are visible at no charge to visitors, and it's free content too for the reader. We do charge employers for those listings, but in return, they're getting in front of an audience of, last month it was 40,000 unique visitors to our website. Those people come because they see job postings there they don't see anywhere else. It doesn't cost them anything. We provide other information because it's, if you're going to be successful in a job search, you can't just look at a job board. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the common objections that you hear about when you give away content for free, and how do you usually respond to them?
If it's another business owner, it's usually a short list. It goes like this. I'm not a writer. It takes too long to do this. I don't have anything to offer. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how to attract readers to my blog or my website. What I would say is, if you're in business or you're running a nonprofit, or you're a successful professional, you're an expert. There is a subject and probably many facets of that subject that you know a lot about. That's a value to people who need your expertise. So start there. Recognize that you have something to offer. Mm-hmm. Writing is a skill and it takes practice. But my experience has been that if you've gone to high school or college, and with deliberate practice, you can get good at online writing. It takes a commitment. And once you start, the key here is to understand the needs of the people you want to serve, mm-hmm. what their problems are. If you solve problems and offer solutions, people will find you. You also have to invest in some marketing, and there's some common practices that don't cost a lot that you can use to drive people to a website or a blog or whatever platform you might use. The process really begins by knowing that you are an expert, you have something to offer, and you've got to zero in on the needs of the people you want to serve. If you do that and you promote your site, you will attract an audience over time. It does take time, mm-hmm. but any relationship building does take time.
Yeah. Well, speaking of relationships and building relationships, business, as you and I both know, is all about relationships, and it's all about networking in a lot of ways. Yet a lot of people seem to struggle in these areas. Why do you think that is?
Well, relationships are hard. You know, it takes time to make connections with others, mm-hmm. and I think sometimes people think you're either a natural networker or you're not. And if you're not, there's nothing you can do about it. I think relationship building and networking it's a skill. And like writing, it is something you can get good at. You just have to practice and be deliberate about it.
Yeah. So how do you approach networking and building relationships? What does practice look like for you?
Well, let's start with what not to do. And I think let's also address what I think is a popular conception when people hear the word networking. So picture this, Chris. It's that airport Holiday Inn right off the highway. And walk in, and everybody is wearing a loud plaid jacket. Ooh. And there's somebody going around that room who thinks that success means collecting the most business cards possible in the shortest amount of time. Have you ever been in that room, Chris?
Too many times. Too many times.
So that's not effective networking. Networking begins with service, and it's about being helpful to others. And it's also about giving to others without any expectation of getting anything in return. I'd love to talk about job hunting in particular, because I think often people think when you say the word networking, it's about meeting someone for coffee or picking someone's brain or going to an industry mixer. There's an effective way to build relationships, and it takes some effort. How do you get good at it? It depends on how you like to learn. Mm-hmm. I happen to love books, and they're no shortage of books about networking or blog posts out there on the topic. You can listen to podcasts, but it is a skill and it can be mastered.
Very cool. Do you think there's a difference between approaching networking from a digital perspective or an in-person perspective?
I think the platforms, of course, are very different, but I think the principles that successful networkers follow, whether it's online or in person, are the same. You know, they're responsive, they're engaging, they're helpful, they're interested in others, and they listen.
What about introverts? How can they approach networking and building relationships, even if they're gripped with maybe fear or anxiety?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because I certainly was very shy myself in high school and college. Now I go to networking events for fun. Shyness, of course, is different from introversion, and as I think you know and your listeners do too, introversion is just a way of getting energy. It's how we recharge. It doesn't mean you can't be a successful networker or be good at building relationships with others. Introverts who I see who are successful at networking events, they do things that play to their strengths. Maybe they have a skill or a role they enjoy playing. Maybe they love photography. So they want to make connections with someone in their industry. There's a professional group that they want to get involved in. They offer to take the pictures at the event, and that gives them a chance to do something they enjoy and also connect with people one-on-one. Another way you might approach it if you're an introvert is to volunteer to work the registration table. Mm-hmm. You've got a role, you've got a job, and again, it gives you the opportunity to meet everybody as they come in. So think about what you enjoy doing, and chances are there's a volunteer role that you could get at an industry event that would allow you to do that and build relationships along the way.
Yeah, that's a great point. Another great point, you talk a lot about informational interviews and the importance of conducting those interviews with professionals. And I think that those are a great way for introverts as well to reach out and get connections. So maybe share a little bit about what an informational interview is and how they've impacted your career.
Absolutely. An informational interview is a business meeting. It's, again, not about picking somebody's brain. It's not about meeting for coffee. It's a structured conversation. Typically, it runs 20 to 30 minutes. It's got three parts, Chris. Hmm. In the first part, you introduce yourself, share your story, and you share your goals. Mm. You can do that in 3 or 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. The second part is you walk into the room with some structured questions. There is a reason why you want to meet this person. Mm-hmm. Maybe she is a leader of the professional association in your field, and you want her to introduce you to people at a company where you'd like to work one day. Maybe the person moved from a position in the nonprofit world to one in the corporate world, and you want to make the same switch, and you'd like to learn from him how he did that and the objections he had to overcome. There's a purpose for the conversation, and you walk into the room with 5 or 6 questions in advance that allow you to have a conversation that addresses the reason for the meeting. The third part is you ask for introductions to other people in the field. And you may have identified these people in advance. Maybe you looked on the lady's LinkedIn profile and you saw that she is connected to people at 3 companies you would love to get inside in. You can say in that conversation, I see you're connected to Joan Smith over at Nike. I would love to have a conversation with her. Would it be all right if I reached out? Even if you don't have a particular person in mind, people who take these meetings expect you to ask, could you recommend 2 or 3 other people in the field I might reach out to? If you do those 3 things, and you can do them in 20 to 30 minutes, at the end of the meeting, there's somebody who knows who you are, what you offer, and what you want to do. They've been impressed by the insightfulness of the questions you've asked, but you've also gotten insights into the world you want to work in. Maybe you've learned who's growing, who's adding new staff, who might be hiring soon. Those are invaluable insights. And even more importantly, Chris, you've got introductions to people in companies or where you might want to work one day, or leaders in your field who can introduce you to others. In the end, it's about growing your network, and that's what a good informational interview does.
It's really fascinating, and it gets me thinking, you know, why would a professional sacrifice their time to help others?
It's a great question, and I hear this a lot from people who haven't done informational interviews, and I can understand why. Most of us, I would say 99.9% of human beings, want to be helpful to others. They really do. And when we hear no, sometimes it's because we're not clear about what we want or how people can be of help to us. So think about this. If I wrote you and I'd said, hey, Chris, Brad Smith over at Hot Pepper Studio suggested I contact you. I wonder if you might have 20 to 30 minutes to talk about my interest in working in multimedia production in the Vancouver, Washington market. Brad says you have excellent insights into the field. As you can see from my attached resume, I've been working in journalism, but I want to move into the agency world. I'm free on the following days during these hours, but I'd be happy to meet at your office or at a coffee shop near your business when you are free. Please let me know if you might be free. Compare that request to, hey, could we get together for coffee soon? I'm doing a search, and I would love just to catch up. And I say all this respectfully because I've sent the second message myself. But when you get that second message, you're thinking, oh, what does this person want? I'm not sure I can be of help. Coffee. Gosh, I'm going to have to leave the office. That means getting in the car. You know, it's like an hour and a half of my time, maybe an hour. There's no limit. You know, do they want to talk for 30 minutes, 60 minutes? What is this going to be like? Who is this person again? So if you want people to say yes, you've got to make it easy for them to say yes. And you're specific about what you want, who sent you, and when you want to get together. It is so much easier to say yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've laid out the perfect game plan for getting started too, in how you've described things. But I bet there's someone who's probably still a little bit hesitant on doing something like this. So how can someone get started?
3 steps. One, just be clear about what you want. What is your job search goal? Do you want an advertising position in a shoe company in the Pacific Northwest? Do you want to do food security policy work for a nonprofit in Sacramento? I don't know what the goal is. Say it out loud, and if you're uncertain, because sometimes we might be interested in exploring 2 or 3 goals, that's okay. Whatever it is, whether it's one, two, or three goals, write them down, and then make lists of the people you think you know who work in those fields or who might know the leaders in those fields, and then request appointments and follow the structure that I've outlined. And full disclosure here, this is not my idea. This is a well-tested model that's been around for decades. Mm-hmm. And Richard Bowles, the author of What Color Is Your Parachute, was talking about this way back in the 1970s. There's a terrific book. You can find it on Amazon, The 20-Minute Networking Meeting by Nathan Perez, that came out 7 or 8 years ago. He takes you through what a good networking meeting looks like and what a bad one looks like. And it's invaluable. It takes you 3 or 4 hours to read. You know, it's study up. Because in the end, Chris, it's a business meeting. And it's an important one. I can't imagine you or any of your listeners would walk into an important business meeting without an agenda, a result in mind, and preparing in advance. Also, in addition to knowing what you want to do and identifying those people, sometimes people get stuck. They say, well, I don't know anyone. I don't have a network. And respectfully, we all have networks. Mm. I think sometimes we don't know where to look and what to ask for. So first be clear about what you want. And then the two easiest places to begin when you are thinking about who you might reach out to are LinkedIn and your college database. LinkedIn, because you can sort by occupation and by company, by geography. So if your dream is to work at Microsoft or Google, chances are you can identify a second or third degree connection inside those companies. Then your challenge is you need to look at the people you know people and start a process that's going to lead to introductions that'll get you in front of people inside those firms. Because here's what you don't want to happen. You should check the websites of the companies where you want to work, and you pay attention to the job boards. But if that's all you're doing, the numbers are going to be stacked against you. Because when you see that job at your dream company, you'll apply, and you should, but you'll be competing against 50, 75, 100 other applications. Now, here's the deal about the hidden job market, whether it's a posted position or an unadvertised one. The people who have some tie to people inside the company have an advantage. And I'm not talking about being related by marriage. It could be that you met someone at an industry mixer and you had a good conversation, or you served on a committee together, or you had an informational interview with someone inside the company. When that happens and you have those connections, you can apply through the front door, but you can also call your contact inside the firm and say, hey, heads up, I just sent in an application for the position. Would you do me a favor? Would you go and let HR know? Hmm. And when that person walks down to HR and says, I spoke to Mary Smith, and she's applied. I know her through this committee or that experience. That HR person is going to take that resume out, and their challenge is they've got to get the pile of 50 or 100 down to 10. Mm-hmm. And ones that have some connection to someone inside the company are probably going to get a phone screen interview. Mm-hmm. Not always, but if you're looking for ways to increase the odds, that is a great way to do it.
Yeah. I had a personal experience with that recently where I had, lunch with a friend, and he's like, hey, I'm going to reach out to HR. And it's amazing how fast the ball rolled from that point.
Yeah. And the principle that's at work here is people hire people they know or people who are recommended by people they trust. Mm. And the reason this happens, it's not a conspiracy, Chris. It's about managing risk, because we've all been inside an organization where somebody came in, it didn't work out, it took 3 to 6 months to figure it out, then you had to start the search again, you blink, suddenly a year has gone by. Mm-hmm. That's expensive and time-consuming, and hiring managers want to avoid that. And the way they manage risk is they turn to people they trust or people who are recommended to them. So our challenge when we're looking for work is we need to insert ourselves in the conversations that are happening during that hiring process and get introduced by people who have some connection to the process. You've had this experience. I'm guessing many of your listeners have as well. We've all had to sort through a stack of resumes. And when somebody comes and says, oh, you should talk to John or you should talk to Terry, we pull that resume out and we take a very careful look at it. And often that person does get an initial interview. Yeah. So you can make that happen in a strategic, deliberate way when you're doing a job search by doing informational interviews, by being clear about what you want, and by not waiting until a job is posted on a job board to start networking inside a company. If you know where you want to go, don't wait until something is posted. Start building relationships inside that organization now.
Yeah, great, great advice. I want to return briefly to where we started, talking about doing good and wanting to really do good work and make a difference. And I'm seeing a lot more companies get involved in a variety of ways, and I'm seeing people really putting the effort in as well as, you know, really wanting to make an impact. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think we all want our work to matter. I think we all want to make a difference in life. And that doesn't mean that you have to join the Peace Corps or be part of a mission or do international relief work. It could be having a job where you're helping people, whether it's in the private or the public sector, but we all want meaning in our life. Mm-hmm.
We're all, you know, in a sense, searching for this meaning. And so how can we find, whether they're nonprofits or, you know, other organizations that we can partner with to find that meaning? Or do we need to just do things on our own? Can we partner with others? I mean, how can we, I guess, go on that journey for meaning in productive ways?
2 points here. One, I do want to emphasize that you don't have to work for a nonprofit to have a job that has purpose and meaning. Hmm. You can work in a store, in an insurance company. Ultimately, businesses solve problems. They provide service, and they make a positive difference in people's lives. And so you can find organizations that are really good at that and live a value of service, and you can do that in the private sector. Mm. If you do want to work in the nonprofit world, that's a different career path. Sometimes I do see people volunteer at nonprofits with the hope that if they put in enough time, it will lead to a job offer. That's not why you should volunteer, because it rarely happens, Chris. There's like any organization, nonprofits have hiring processes, and it certainly helps to have relationships inside an organization and be a candidate if you do become a candidate for a job there. But instead, you should volunteer because it's going to give you satisfaction in other ways. Perhaps it's you want to serve that community. Maybe you want to learn more about that field. Maybe you want to help the organization itself grow and serve others better.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought up the point, too, about private corporations as well doing good. Because I think sometimes we maybe see news stories or read things where we think, oh, you know, all business is bad, you know. But it's a very important point that there are opportunities that businesses provide that enable good to happen.
It is an important point. And I think you can get a great deal of satisfaction from what some might consider an ordinary job, particularly one that puts you in contact with other people every day, because there's an opportunity, whether you're behind a cash register, to make a positive difference in people's days. You know, I'm a bicycle commuter. I'm sure you've had this experience, whether you're cycling, walking, or just moving around the community. If you smile at people, people will smile back. Have you had that experience, Chris?
I have.
Yeah. And I think it's the same. The mindset we have that we bring to our job, whatever the position might be, can make a big difference. And I don't want to be Pollyannish here. You know, you want to have an employer who pays a decent wage and provides great working conditions and ideally flexibility and other benefits. You should look for that. The employers who who do those things, I think, are going to have values that are going to make it even easier for you to find purpose and meaning in your work.
Yeah. Well, this has been an awesome conversation, and I just have one last question for you.
Okay, fire away.
What's one book or resource that has impacted your life or your business?
I thought about this. The book I like that has made a big difference in my business and in my personal life is Mindset by Carol Dweck. Do you know about this one, Chris?
I've read mentions of it, like quotes in other books, but I haven't read the book itself. But it's fixed versus growth mindset, correct?
Exactly. And it sounds like you're familiar with the idea, which is that people with a fixed mindset believe qualities like talent and intelligence are fixed. In other words, you've only got so much of it. And so they spend their energy documenting their accomplishments and they don't really grow. But the people with a growth mindset believe you can develop and improve those qualities. And they learn, most importantly, I think they take risks and they fail. So the people I've seen who've had the most success in their careers have usually had a lot of setbacks too. You know, I run two small businesses now. I've been fired twice. I know what it's like to walk to the parking lot with all your things in the box. Yeah. So, and I know what it's like to cash your last unemployment check. The point here is resilience matters, and having that growth mindset I've found has certainly been crucial to my success, and I've seen the same thing happen in other people who are successful.
Yeah. So, Mac, where can people learn more about you and the work you do?
They can visit our website, maxlist.org. We have a podcast that I mentioned. We publish every Wednesday. It's called Find Your Dream Job. If you're looking for practical nuts and bolts advice about how to look for work and manage your career, you can find it on iTunes and our website. We do have a book, Chris, called Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's on Amazon. And if you're listeners go to maxlist.org/work. They can download the first chapter for free. And the book contains practical advice about networking, goal setting, all the job hunting and career tips that we've discussed today.
Awesome. Well, Mac, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. It's been a pleasure to hear your story, to learn a lot about relationships and informational interviews. And I always enjoy a good conversation about making a difference in this world. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast. It means so much to me that you do. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Got a few moments to let me know what you think of the show? Head to Getting Work to Work on Apple Podcasts, click ratings and reviews, and either click the number of stars to rate the show or write a review. Thank you so much. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.